This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
You know, Jay, a stressful part of playing Survivor was not being able to get things off my chest, since when it came down to it, we were all after the same price.
Yeah. And since you played such an amazing social game, it must have been hard to keep things bottled up.
Absolutely. It was rough having to keep everything inside, big and small things, to stay focused on the game.
And having to do that can have a really negative effect on us, which is one of the reasons that I love therapy.
Exactly. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try.
It's all online and made to be convenient and flexible so it can fit your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist.
And you can switch therapists at any time for free, so you're sure you're on a team with the right person.
Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/onfire today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/onfire. Survivor fans, we are not just surviving, we are thriving with the power of nutrition. Let's talk about Wonderful Pistachios, a snack that's not only delicious, but also a protein powerhouse.
When I was on that island, I would give anything for a snack to keep my energy levels up.
Well, did you know Wonderful Pistachios are one of the highest protein nuts out there? Each 1 ounce serving gives you 6 grams of protein, delivering over 10% of your daily value.
Whether you're a hardcore survivor or just need a boost during your day, Wonderful Pistachios are the perfect personal protein stash, ready to go whenever hunger strikes. So whether you're cracking open each nut one by one or enjoying the convenience of no shells, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered.
Outwit, outplay, outsnack with Wonderful Pistachios.
Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Welcome to On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. I'm Jeff Probst, the host and showrunner of Survivor. Each week, I'm joined by Jay Wolf, Survivor fan and the producer of this podcast. Hello, Jay.
Hey, Jeff.
As well as former Survivor player, the winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares. How's it going, Dee?
Hey, hey.
So each week, we dissect the big moments of the most recent episode of Survivor and then bring you the insight from three different points of view: the fan, the player, and the producer. That's what we're trying to do to set this podcast apart from a recap podcast, of which there are many and all very good, but that's not what we do. Okay, Jay, let's get into the big moments from episode 6. Where do you want to start?
Well, I want to start with some tree mail delivered in a different way this episode by high-speed boat.
It's day 12 and the game is about to change. You have 10 minutes to collect your things. The boat is waiting for you to take you.
Told you. So this lovely piece of paper says, dropped your buff, you're taking you to your new home. And if you watch Survivor, you know what that means. Merge, baby.
Jeff, some of us are still expecting to hear you say,
oh, I got it. Everybody, drop your buffs.
Wow. There's a tingly feeling just
hearing
it. I know.
It's crazy. Even for me.
Yeah. And so the question is, what's the purpose of doing this via note as opposed to having that moment and then sending the players into this sort of limbo where they're not 100% sure what's going on?
Yeah, how it started was, we've talked about this, but when we realized that we were just giving the merge to the players, we thought, oh, that can't be. They have to earn this. But then we also realized that within the earning it, there's an opportunity that we could explore, that time between dropping your buffs when you're no longer on any tribe and earning your new buff, which means you have made the merge and you're in the individual part of the game. And what happens right there is you have this combination of new people, new social politics, along with the anxiety of being in limbo. And we thought it might offer a turning point in the game because some players would be able to successfully exploit this moment to their advantage. Other players, while trying to do the same thing, might make a mistake.
Mm.
And Dee, tell me if I get this right. You're looking to make new relationships, but you know that the earn the merge challenge is coming, where you're going to have a random group of people holding your fate in your hands. So I'm guessing you have to be very mindful of everything you say because you don't want to miss an opportunity to bond.
Yeah.
You also don't want to create a problem if you're on the wrong group.
Yeah, this is actually not the time to strategy talk so early on or stir the pot with some drama because we still have to earn the merge. We don't know what you're going to throw at us.
Well, and from a strategic point of view for us, it's what Dee just said. this gives us a chance to capitalize on that uncertainty because we could do something different. Mm. Maybe we are going to merge like we have the past several seasons, or maybe we aren't. And that makes it very tricky for the player. Mm. You can look at history and use that as a guide. That's really smart gameplay, but you always have to have a little asterisk next to it. It doesn't mean anything other than an indicator of what has happened in the past.
Yeah, we saw that with Soda when she showed up at the challenge and you asked her, is she new? D, this limbo moment, to me, it kind of felt like a corporate retreat, you know, where you've been on Zoom with people for 3.5 years, you never met them in person, and all of a sudden you're standing around in the same campfire. Is that how it feels to you?
Yes, but you know what? I feel like those Zoom moments, they're kind of fake in a way, right? Like when you're behind screen, that's what it feels like out there. It feels a little fake. You can feel that everyone's just trying to put their best foot forward and just being a little bit too over-friendly. And you can sense when someone's being too over-friendly. And so for me, in those limbo moments, like I said earlier, it was not my time to talk strategy. It was just kind of like get to know everyone. And I sat smack in the middle of camp because I wanted to make sure that even though I'm having a conversation with you, Jay, I wanted to know what was happening to my right. And I wanted to know what was happening to my left.
Yep.
Well, now we see why you won. Okay, so the next moment I want to talk about is the clock that occurs to Hunter. We saw this early on when Tiff got the very first immunity idol of the season and she had this ticking clock on the Beware advantage. And we talked about how much fun that is. And we saw it again here. Jeff, I'm curious, process-wise, how you judge a new idea after you introduce it into the game. So now we've seen this ticking clock on finding the idol multiple times. And in my opinion, I thought it was great. Does that mean it stays?
I'll tell you exactly how we do it because we just did it for Survivor 47. We are actively working on the creative for 47, and we were just discussing yesterday, okay, do we want idols at the beginning of the game? We usually do that. Maybe we don't this season. If so, do we want them to be Beware advantages? We've been doing that lately. Maybe we don't this season. And then we look at what we literally just did in 46 and say, okay, coming on the heels of that, should we do the same thing again? It worked really well. It's very dangerous. It's exciting for the player and the audience. Or do we do something completely different? I know you're sensing a pattern. We ask ourselves these questions, and then we really are playing a game with the future players of the game. So it is this cat and mouse because there's no rule book for our game design. The only thing we do is lay it out before we shoot. But whatever we lay out is whatever mood we're in or where we think the game should go. Do we go backwards? Should we go forwards? What if we do the exact same thing? We could do an entire season exactly the same way. It might be fun to try because the players wouldn't know until it was over that that's what had happened because of that word that I know I say all the time, uncertainty. Mm-hmm. So in answer to your question that you asked 8 minutes ago, whether or not these idols with a ticking clock will come back, yes, we agree. They worked really well. And I think you'll just have to wait and see.
Oh. Okay, I'll accept that answer from you, Jeff. And I guess I'll have to wait and see. D, Hunter has this limited time to get his idol and he starts acting kind of like a weirdo. Mm-hmm. He utters a line that I think might go down with Jelinski in Survivor history.
I'm going to vibe for a second.
You vibe.
Catch my breath.
You catch my breath. You do you.
I'm just going to go vibe for a second. I love it. and he starts kind of, like I said, acting silly. Because the audience knows Hunter's on this ticking clock to get this idol, I think immediately we're like, why isn't everybody reading into this? But as a player on the beach, is the idol top of mind here?
Well, look, you can't just go vibe for a second on Survivor. You're never by yourself, okay, unless you're using the bathroom. But at this point, it's been 2 weeks. So it's a thing, but it's not the thing because now we got our own stuff to worry about. Everyone's coming to our beach. And look, I feel like I'm really good at reading people, but at this point in the game, during these moments, I only know one bubble of information from my tribe. Now, two other tribes are coming, and I need to make sure that either I know all the information or I'm not getting lied to about the information that's coming my way. So it can change the entire trajectory of your game.
And also, D, I think something we don't say enough on the podcast is The audience knows. They know Hunter. He's just reminded him. They're going to go watch him dig it up. You have no idea. You have no information.
At all. And actually, the way that Hunter even went to Vi for a second, just sitting down on the steps, that could be normal. You know what I mean? So it seems obvious to the audience, but to us, he's just sitting on the freaking steps waiting for the boats to come.
Yep.
Yeah. I would say flying around like an airplane isn't 100% normal everyday behavior, but I don't know Hunter. So, you know, it is what it is.
Maybe he likes to do that.
So, D, on that, everybody's coming to the same beach and now sharing this same space. What's the initial feeling when that happens?
It's exciting, but it's also a little annoying because now you got roommates. Now we're going to live together in camp. You got more people, less privacy. You're constantly losing your belongings. Your camp is messier. So psychologically, your head is in a messier headspace too with all the shoes everywhere. Now I'm hanging my clothes up in a different tree and I'm annoyed because somebody put their clothes where I'm supposed to hang up my clothes. But also we're sleeping jam-packed in this bamboo. So even when I move, I'm waking up the person next to me and I still haven't built a relationship with the person next to me. So in my head, I'm like, am I annoying them? Are they going to think that maybe I'm annoying when they're sleeping next to me? And a step further, even we have a designated area to share bathroom, right? But now with more people, now I got to watch my step wherever I go. So it's a lot happening all at once.
Well, all right, let's take a break. When we come back, one tiny rock can change your entire game. We'll get to the merge challenge and what was one of the wildest rock draws in Survivor history. Be right back.
Listen, wearing the same clothes for 26 days straight on Survivor really made me realize the importance of buying high-quality, long-lasting clothes. That's why I love Quince. They have timeless, well-made pieces that last for years and don't go out of style. Quince has all the seasonal must-haves like 100% European linen shirts, performance polos, and versatile flow-knit activewear. Buying pieces from Quince means that I don't have to keep buying new clothes every year, which is better for my wallet and the environment. I recently got a super chic Italian leather tote from Quince, and I'm loving how it looks. The best part about Quince is that by partnering directly with top factories, they're able to keep prices super affordable. I'm talking 50 to 80% cheaper than similar brands. And the other best part is that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices. I love that. Upgrade your wardrobe. Go to quince.com/survivor for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/survivor to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/survivor.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
You know, Jay, a stressful part of playing Survivor was not being able to get things off my chest, since when it came down to it, we were all after the same price.
Yeah. And since you played such an amazing social game, it must have been hard to keep things bottled up.
Absolutely. It was rough having to keep everything inside, big and small things, to stay focused on the game.
And having to do that can have a really negative effect on us, which is one of the reasons that I love therapy.
Exactly. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try.
It's all online and made to be convenient and flexible so it can fit your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist.
And you can switch therapists at any time for free, so you're sure you're on a team with the right person.
Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/onfire today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/onfire.
Welcome back to On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. Okay, Jay, next moment, please.
All right, so we finally make it to the merge challenge.
Yep.
And it's this huge, epic thing you're staring at. There's nets, there's mud, there's towers, you're climbing up a giant ball, there's a three-stage puzzle, and the key component is a rock in a bag.
Shall we draw for our groups?
Yes! Oh my God. Good luck, guys. Everyone.
All right, here we go. Your fate is in your hands. Your entire game could change based on a rock draw. That does not rock.
Does not rock. Does not rock.
Yeah, these moments are big for me because I can feel the electricity. So you said it. It's just a rock in a bag that our art department got from the beaches of Fiji, and they painted it a certain color. That's all it is. But to the player, It's absolutely everything. Dee, I'm curious, when I come down that line and there's just this bag and you reach your hand in and blindly grab a rock, what were you feeling?
Well, first of all, you're coming towards us. You're making eye contact with each of us. So we're like, Jeff, when you get to me, that eye contact better mean I'm getting the best rock out here. I am praying to the Fijian gods, the universe, that I don't get screwed over. So it's heavy. And then once you see everyone getting their rocks, it's like, you know, the moment's coming when you're about to open your palm. It's a scary, very scary moment.
Jay, I'm not exaggerating. I can feel everything Dee said from the players. I can feel their anticipation. Yeah. I can feel their dread. I can feel the exhilaration and the excitement because the game is alive and the outcome is uncertain. That's the monster that I sometimes talk about. The game is a thing and you're never really safe. And then, as Dee said, you look down the line and everybody reveals.
So scary.
What was that like for you, Dee?
So for me, it was like, I just better not get stuck with like weak people.
Which is exactly what happened. A completely random rock draw resulted in the most lopsided groups you could have. That's why we designed these challenges from this standpoint. We want them to be big and epic. Everything you described, Jay, you know, the big ball and the mud and all that stuff. We also always test them with the smallest group that could possibly be drawn in a random rock draw to make sure, let's say there's a couple of short people, can they both get up over this ball and get to the top of the tower, whatever it is, then there's a little anxiety that it will happen and it will work. But I think one thing you see out there is when our dream team tests something, they're working. They're working hard. They work very hard and they're enthusiastic, but they are not playing for $1 million. And that added burst of adrenaline, as Diaz talked about, it just takes the game to the next level. And I think that's what you see play out in this challenge where arguably you could say definitely don't bet on the smaller group. They're not going to win. And yet they had a shot. They had a real shot to pull that off.
Yeah.
What is that, Dee? Take us inside of that extra gear that you wouldn't get if this was a Sunday thing at a park. You might not even do it. You'd like, I don't want to get muddy today.
Well, I would do it because I think it's so fun. But when, like you said, when you're playing for $1 million, it's different. And in my season, I got stuck with the weaker group, but we were also kind of close. You know, you strategize and you say, okay, you know what? They're going to be stronger in the sandbags, but we're going to climb that ball a lot faster than they are, you know? So you're just constantly strategizing in your head about these moments. But I'll tell you what, it's very scary to be in the losing side of the tribe.
It's really interesting to hear you say that even though you're down, you are still assessing, okay, they're stronger. Maybe we're smarter on the puzzle. Mm-hmm. That's what played out here. It was lopsided in terms of visual. It wasn't that lopsided in terms of execution. A few puzzle pieces faster, they might have won this.
Yeah. Dee, having played every challenge on Survivor in your season, even though you lost this one, the merge challenge in your season, is this the hardest challenge on Survivor?
For me, every tribe challenge is the most difficult, but this one was even more difficult because obviously what was at stake, right? And personally, it was one of my favorites. We're starting in the mud, then we're in individual effort, switching to group effort, moving sandbags. I actually almost twisted my ankle 2 times moving those sandbags because at this point, you're not even caring about your form. You don't care if your back hurts. You just want to make sure that you get stuff done so that you can move faster, especially coming from a much quote unquote weaker tribe. But it was one of the hardest challenges for sure.
All right, I want to stay on the challenge for one more second. And this moment might surprise everybody listening. Jeff, I wanted to ask you about sawdust.
Jim! Jim with a nice header into the sawdust.
Jeff, I heard you say this on tonight's episode, and I thought to myself, huh, how'd they get all that sawdust out there? And why did they get all that sawdust out there?
I love that you noticed this. I didn't think about it, but it is an interesting part of designing a challenge. And that sawdust, well, it comes from the art department, but where it comes from is years of experience in building challenges in this way. We didn't think about sawdust in the early seasons for your landing. So if you fell, you'd be falling on hard dirt. So that informs how tall or how high or how scary you can make a challenge element. But then somebody in the art department said, you know, we could give them just a tiny cushion of sawdust to help soften the impact a little bit. And if we do that, then we could make the tower even taller and even scarier. Because what you want is what Dee just talked about. You want the player to be a little intimidated and say, wow, can I do that? But you also ultimately want them to be safe-ish so that when they are courageous enough to leap off or climb up and fall over the other side, they don't get hurt. To be clear, you can still get hurt on Survivor. These are real challenges. It's a real jungle, real rocks, real roots, all that stuff. But just taking all of that into account, that's the goal, so that when Dee shows up, she's immediately saying, okay, I'll be strong here, but I might not be as strong there. I'm assessing, but I'm going to go for it the minute I hear go.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Okay, so let's move on to post-challenge. The winners get the merge meal. We asked Devin's his take on this in season two of Empire, but Dee, I want to ask you, your body hasn't had anything. Now you're about to be presented with thousands of calories that you can shove into your body. You haven't seen food, and food is what keeps us alive, right? Yeah. Like, it's like there's a human reaction, I imagine, to seeing food like this. Do you eat more than you wish you had? Are you able to say, I'm going to monitor my caloric intake when I get to the merge meal, especially when you're conditioned to know there might be another 13 days I don't get to eat?
Yeah. Okay, well, I hope you guys are ready to get a little personal. But first of all, whoever monitors their calorie intake is a psychopath, because you're on Survivor, you want to eat everything. You should eat everything in that merge meal, even at the expense of what's going to happen next. So I cannot believe that I'm going to say this on the On Fire podcast in front of two dudes. But in one of the rewards, I ate so much that my stomach locked up, got hard as a rock, and I had to run to the ocean. But actually, I didn't even make it to the ocean. I made it to the bushes and I started throwing up. And I had the producer, she was following me, running behind me, trying to catch the footage. And I was like, wait, no, you got to leave. I need to use the bathroom. So I was throwing up and using the bathroom at the exact same time, and that had never in my life happened to me before. I was on Survivor. Okay. So that's how intense this is.
And I want to clarify, just so you understand why she said, no, I'm going to the bathroom. That's the only time we give you privacy. If you're going to the bathroom alone, then we will not shoot you. If you're going to the bathroom with another person or people, that's your own thing, but we will keep shooting you. All right, let's take one more break. When we come back, we'll take you inside the largest tribal. This is when we have the most people, 13, and over half of them are safe. We'll be right back. Welcome back to On Fire. All right, Jay, set us up.
Jeff, I had a question before we get into this giant tribal, and I'm excited to get there, about the call to actions to apply that we've seen this season. Sometimes they're immediately after the aftermath of what's just happened, and you turn to camera and you say, hey, you want this?
Yeah.
Get on out here.
Yeah, and that's kind of how it goes. We did one last season with Emily. She had won an individual immunity challenge, and she was shaking. Her entire body was vibrating. You remember this, Dee?
Yep.
Right after the players left, I mean, like within 30 seconds, the camera started rolling, and I was like, okay, if that sounds fun or looks like something you want to try, apply to be on Survivor, because we knew that is the magic of the show, is that something like that could happen to you, but you got to get up off the couch in order to get a shot. Other times, I'll just spend 20 minutes and I'll just shoot some different ones. I got a funny text the other day from a friend, and he sent me his daughter, who's like 9 or 10, mocking me doing this call to action. And she said the reason was, is she said to her dad, he's so over the top. He's always like climbing through the jungle. And what is he doing? We know he's just out there asking us to apply. So I put it out there. I love being mocked. Feel free to continue to mock me on TikTok. I'm very mockable. And I get a kick out of it. I mean, my tongue is in my cheek every day on Survivor.
Should we tell the people how to apply to Survivor now that we're here just quickly?
Sure. Do it.
Mock Jeff.
I don't know that I'd recommend that, but it's CBSSurvivorCasting.com if you're interested in applying. All right, let's get into the last moment, which is the largest tribal council of the season. I mean, it's huge. 13 players are at this tribal council. Now 7 of them are safe. six of them are not. We, the audience, get set up with, we know who's on the bottom. Dee, what is it like for you as a player at this tribal council?
I hate it because I'm at the bottom. Being on the losing side of the merge, where half of the people are not safe, is the scariest thing ever. I feel good in my alliances. But at this point in the game, you could never be too confident. So I honestly didn't really know for sure until Jeff started reading 2 to 3 votes in, where I was like, oh my God, I can breathe. It's not me going home. That is when you're finally feeling confident. But before then, you could never be too confident.
Dee, I wonder if there's just a little more there, because even for me, when you all come in and sit down, I know intellectually that you have an idea what's going to happen. I also know emotionally that you can't be certain. Mm-hmm. So I'm always aware that you are having to play the game with confidence because you want your alliance members, if they're being true, to know that you're being true to them. But I'm also aware that you're sitting on that stool terrified. Can you take us inside that moment that is happening, even though you still have to play the game? It could be you because it's going to be someone.
Yeah, and that's why when players get blindsided, you see the pure emotions. Either it's anger or it's complete sadness. And as a player, when you're sitting in that stool, you're thinking to yourself, you're asking my alliance a question and they're answering so well that I actually think, damn, are they going to blindside me? Are they talking about me? Because this is how well people lie on Survivor. You actually never really know. It's insane out there. It is.
I think Kelly from season 45 said it best. What the hell, guys?
What the hell, guys?
Oh, Kelly.
So we've said before, this is the most amount of people that are going to be at a tribal council.
Yeah.
Jeff, how do you change the approach, if at all, in terms of how it gets produced logistically?
Yeah, it's not a big change. I mean, you might bring in a few more cameras and operators. Like when the jury starts, we have another bank of cameras that will shoot jury members. But for the most part, it's the same setup every night. And I think you're hitting at something, Jay, which is, here's what you want tribal to be. From a physical location, you want it to be the spectacle that when the player walks in, they're in awe of this giant grandeur, all this scale. But then when they sit down on that little stool, you want it to be this tiny, intimate, emotional, and terrifying experience. So what Zach Jensen and his team with the art department have to do is they have to get both of that. And that includes, where are the cameras? How do we hide them so that they aren't just shining a big light at the players? Because ultimately, it is about the emotional experience. This is where you are held accountable for your actions. And as a result, someone is going home tonight. Dee, does this ring true to you?
Let me tell you, when you walk into tribal, obviously you're excited. It's tribal. You're in awe. And it goes away so fast. Now we're in this moment of intimacy and all you're hearing are whispers and other players responding to your questions. And it makes me think to myself, hey, I really like the way this person's answering Jeff's question. They think the same way I think about the game. Maybe they could be my potential allies after this vote. So
wait, Dee, you're saying in the middle of our conversation in which you are desperately trying to make sure your alliance is still going to do what they said they're going to do, you are simultaneously reevaluating who might be in your next alliance?
100%. You're getting insight into the way the players play the actual game, because camp life is different. You could lie. I mean, you could lie at tribal too, but this is them playing the game, you know? So it really does make you reconsider.
And Jay, this is what I mean when I say that rock draw is emblematic of everything, because the game is alive and uncertain. Now Dee is taking us even deeper. It's still alive and still uncertain. What is true tonight, if I survive, may not be true tomorrow based on what I just heard that woman say.
And that's why I'm watching the next episode. Jeff, do you have any parting thoughts on Mariah?
I love Mariah. I went into my notes. I won't always do this. I don't know if it's interesting, but I looked up Mariah and what I wrote was, this was from my first Zoom with her. I really like her. She doesn't push. She's truthful and comfortable with who she is. She has turned her quirkiness into cool. She accomplished a lot at a young age, and I think she'll relate to a lot of players, especially young girls who are watching. I see her on the show.
Love that.
And yes, she got voted out. as will 17 of the 18 who played this season and every season. Getting voted out doesn't necessarily mean anything other than this time it was you that was got. Mm. But in order to get got, you have to have the courage to play the game in the first place. And ultimately, I think in almost every situation, a blindside is some form of a survivor badge of honor.
Mm. Definitely.
All right, let's get to some fan questions. And if you're sitting at home thinking, hey, I have a bunch of questions about Survivor that I want answered, well, this could be you. All you got to do is write an email to survivorshoutout@cbs.com. I will read those questions, maybe even read them here, like this one from Caleb that says, Jeff, J.D., love the podcast and all of you. My question is, how are the titles of episodes selected? Typically, they're direct quotes from players. Are these chosen to be episode titles when the episode is near completion? Does production stockpile their favorites throughout filming? How do you do it?
Hmm. Well, you're pretty close, Caleb, to how we do it. The producers get to name their episodes. And yes, mostly they're named after a quote from a player. Sometimes I think it's been a quote from me. But to your point, they may not find it until they're in the final mix of the show, when they hear it in a different way. The music's here, the dialogue is cutting through, we hear a sound effect, and they go, that's the title of the episode. Mm. Other times, I know this has happened with Wackadoodle's Win, that when they were on the island, the producer of that episode said, well, I got my title, Wackadoodle's Win. And if you think back in the very early seasons, they were literally on the nose. It would be called The Merge.
Right.
You know, that's all it said. But today it's
boring.
It's boring, right. Today it's more about personality and fun for the audience. For those people like Caleb who look at what the episode title is, we just wanted to have a little bit of a wink.
Mm. That was a great question. The next question is coming from Everly. I'm a huge fan and hope to be on the show one day. My question's for Dee. When playing Survivor, did you ever wake up and forget you were on Survivor? Kind of like when you have a sleepover and forget you're at someone else's house. Thanks so much, DJ and Jeff. All right, so the answer here is pretty simple. It's a big fat no. And it's for multiple reasons. You do not have $1 million at a friend sleepover. We're not getting the regular 6 to 8 hours of sleep. Sometimes it's honestly only 2 hours if we're lucky.
Man.
And that's because the paranoia is at an all-time high that even your dreams become Survivor related. And I'm not kidding about this. You see Drew sleep talking in my season about strategy.
Right.
Okay. That's insane.
That is insane.
It happens every single night. And I also would constantly wake up in the middle of the night to count the people in the bamboo to make sure no one was strategizing without me. So even if you did want to sleep and forget that you were on Survivor, my advice would be do not forget that you're on Survivor.
Okay, our last question comes from Rick. He writes, hi, podcast team. Thanks for the amazing show. Loving all three angles of the viewing process. After watching every season, the debate in our family is, do the editors know who is the sole survivor prior to beginning the editing process?
Okay, Rick, gather the family around. This is how it works. We plot a season out like it's one giant murder mystery. So the first thing we do is all the producers and editors, everybody gets together and talks as a team. Okay, this is the overall vibe of the season, because each season is different and we want each season to feel for the audience like it did for the players. Then we look at the big turning points of the entire season, because every season will have 3, 4, 5, 6 really big game-shifting moments, and we use those as tent poles, and that's going to guide the entire season. Then we look at every player. Here is their individual journey, whether it's Jelinski, who is first out, or the player who goes on to win the game, like Dee. We chart out their entire story, their gameplay, their emotional approach. We want to capture their essence. In fact, we're now almost halfway through this season of 46. You should have a pretty good sense of the players. Mm-hmm. Then you start breaking down each episode. And within each episode, you do the same thing. Turning point. Mm-hmm. Who makes it? Whose point of view should we use to explain it? It sounds like a lot of math and a lot of work. And it is, because you are building the structure. But that's the reason a storyteller gets into the business of storytelling. The structuring of the story is where the magic is, the sequencing of scenes. And that's when you get into, do you hold this information or do you reveal this information? And if so, when and where and why? That's why everybody loves this job. And it's why when people ask me and they say, well, you have the best job of all time, I say, you're absolutely right. I do.
Wait, Jeff, so is the answer yes or no? Because I missed that.
The answer is yes. Everybody knows everything about the season when we start, and then we work backwards from there.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
All right, that's it for this week's episode of On Fire. If you enjoy the show and you have a moment and you can give us a rating, we do appreciate it. We love everybody that's been writing us and telling us what you like, and Panderer, what you don't like.
And if you really want to go for it, you can leave us a review like this one that comes from Lisa M. I look forward to every single episode of Survivor and especially the podcast. When listening to the podcast, I feel like I'm hashing the episode over with friends. LOL. I know you don't hear me coming back, but trust me, I do. My husband thinks I'm losing it. He's just not on my level when it comes to Survivor. But the show gets me ready to throw down with my peeps at the gym Thursday morning.
Love it.
Love everything about your show.
So if you leave us a nice review like that one from Lisa, and trust me, Lisa, we do hear you when you're talking back to us. Go do that wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, there's a brand new episode of Survivor every Wednesday at 8, 7 Central on CBS and Paramount+. And immediately following the episode, you get another one of these, On Fire. See you then.